This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're spending all of our show on the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol building 1 year ago today. Earlier this morning, Vice President Kamala Harris said January 6th, 2021, belonged on the short list of America's days that will live in infamy, alongside December 7th, 1941, and September 11th, 2001. President Biden, meanwhile, was unsparing in his criticism of both the rioters and those who spurred them on.
You can't love your country only when you win. You can't obey the law only when it's convenient. You can't be patriotic when you embrace and enable lies. Those who stormed this Capitol, and those who instigated and incited, and those who called on them to do so, held a dagger at the throat of America.
Last year, on the morning after, we spoke with political analyst and historian Jonathan Alter, who described January 6th this way.
The most disgraceful, shameful day in American history was yesterday. And I don't really think there's any day that is even close. We've never seen anything like this. A president of the United States inciting violence in order to prevent the peaceful transfer of power. The United States has always stood for democracy, representative government, and the peaceful transfer of power.
Alter is an Illinois native and one of those hardworking journalists with many affiliations. I'll list just a few. MSNBC analyst, Daily Beast columnist. There's a Substack called Old Goats, and he's the author of several books, including a biography of Jimmy Carter called His Very Best. Jonathan Alter, welcome back to the 21st.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, our lines are open for this conversation, 800-222-9455. How are you reflecting on the January 6th insurrection 1 year later? And how worried are you about the future of democratic self-governance here in America? 800-222-9455 is the number to call in, 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show. Okay, as we just heard, 1 year ago, you said January 6th was the most disgraceful day in American history. How are you thinking about it today?
Well, I wouldn't change that assessment at all. You know, President Biden today made reference to Pearl Harbor, and you know, but that was an attack like 9/11 from outside of the United States on our democracy. And then he also talked about the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where John Lewis was beaten, and you know, made reference to the civil rights movement. He was trying to say that good things can come out of dark moments. Even that, you know, which was a reflection of you know, the original sin of America, slavery and racial discrimination. And it was a terrible event on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, but not as grievous as an attack on our Capitol. I think my assessment of the seriousness of it hasn't changed, but I have been enormously surprised and discouraged and disappointed that it didn't lead to a serious reassessment on the part of the Republican Party about whether they wanted this fascist, which is really the only word that, you know, properly describes Donald Trump, why they wanted, after that assault on the Capitol, to have him be president again. This is a real surprise that there are so many people who either bought his lie, which was rejected by all of the judges he appointed, 60 cases where judges found no evidence of vote fraud. So they either, you know, these Republicans who to this day in very large numbers are supporting President Trump, former President Trump, they're doing so in defiance of our rule of law, of our judges. And they either believe the big lie, in which case they've been brainwashed, or, and this is the case in many situations, they privately know that the election was not stolen. They privately know that Trump is unfit for office, but they're so cynical and so ambitious politically and so willing to put their own political interests ahead of the Constitution, as Liz Cheney, conservative Republican, said the other day, that they still are willing to say they would support Donald Trump if he was the Republican nominee to come back and inflict this on us all over again.
There was that 24, 48 hours, maybe even 3 days, where it really did feel like the fever was maybe breaking last January. We got a text from one of our listeners who said, "I don't think the press is being totally candid with the public about how bad our constitutional crisis is. A lot of my friends have relaxed because Trump is out of office. I think our constitutional republic has about a 50-50 chance of survival." And this morning, former President Jimmy Carter, who you have spent a lot of time thinking and writing about in recent years, he had an op-ed in the New York Times in which he talks about the big lie, this false idea that former President Trump did not, in fact, lose the election. And he's worried about the future of democracy. Where are you on that assessment? 50-50 chance, as our listener said?
I think the chances are a little better than that, but they're odds that I'm not comfortable with. So maybe 75% chance that our democracy survives. But that's, that is very scary. I just heard this morning that Jimmy Carter, who, you know, I spent a lot of time with over the last 5 years, but he's been, he's 97. I just heard from one of his close former aides that he actually wrote that op-ed piece himself, which is really a very well argued clarion call for us to fight for our democracy. We have a democracy crisis in the United States right now, and it is time. I know people are exhausted and they, you know, put up with a lot in the Trump years. You've got COVID and people's busy lives, but you know, I would just urge your listeners to really take notice of the fact that we do have a democracy crisis. And, we have two parties, as we have for many, many decades, but they're not really properly defined. Right now, we have a Democratic Party and we have an anti-democracy party in this country.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because, go ahead.
The differences on issues of taxes or abortion, however one comes out on these other issues, they pale in comparison. This is Liz Cheney's big point to whether you believe in the rule of law and in truth and in accountability for an attack on the citadel of our democracy.
I'm so glad you mentioned that point because we had a caller in December who sort of said, when we were talking about this subject, and there was that moment, right? The Atlantic seemed to have an article every day for a week or two on this topic. And they said, "Oh boy, I wish you would have had the other side on." And I think this is just one of those things. It's not, like you said, it's not tax policy. It's not abortion. There are not two sides to whether we have free and fair elections that are not meddled with by elected officials in this country. Do you think Democrats in Congress right now properly or maybe adequately are responding to the actual threats? I mean, as important as voting rights and that the John Lewis bill and the For the People Act might be, they would not affect the ability of state legislatures to nullify the votes of the people in those states necessarily.
Well, that is a very good question. Because there is this novel legal theory that the Constitution empowers state legislatures, it was hard for the authors of the John Lewis Act and the Freedom to Vote Act to address that particular concern, which is going to have to work its way through the courts. But they do have a lot else in that bill to put up guardrails to protect democracy and to protect voting rights. And my worry is that a bipartisan group now, led by Republican Senator Susan Collins, is working on a very narrow bill that would simply reform the Electoral Count Act of 1887, which was vague on the question of the role of the vice president. And we know that that was a big issue a year ago today. And so they're, you know, in consultations about making it clear that the vice president doesn't have this power that, you know, Trump and his acolytes were going to try to pretend that he had, and that, you know, he just has a ceremonial role in certifying the election, as Dan Quayle told Mike Pence, and Mike Pence eventually agreed to. So what worries me is that Collins and this bipartisan group that she's put together are going to reform that and then call it a day and, you know, feel like they don't have to do anything else. Right now, you have all 50 Democrats who are for the two important and really quite good bills, the John Lewis Act and the Freedom to Vote Act, but only 48 of the 50 are at this moment ready to reform the filibuster so that it can go through, these bills can go through on a majority vote. So the big issue right now is getting Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to agree to some kind of reform of the filibuster so that this legislation can pass. Because as Chuck Schumer pointed out, the state legislatures in, you know, in dozens of states now, or close to two dozen states, they are by majority vote in Republican-controlled state legislatures. They are both suppressing the vote and making it easier to overturn the vote. And yet, at the federal level, currently, a supermajority is required. So that is, you know, that's another way in which democracy is receding, is because at the state level, they're using majority vote, and at the federal level, because of an unwillingness to amend the filibuster, it requires a supermajority. So that's what Schumer is focused on trying to change between now and Martin Luther King Day on the 17th of this month. And he has the Senate focused on this, but I'm worried about it. It's extraordinarily important that these two bills be approved, and that Collins and other Republicans don't get away with saying, well, you know, we closed the barn door after the horse almost got out on this vice presidential thing. So we straightened that out. So now we're done. And that won't wash.
In the few minutes we have remaining, I want to ask you, you mentioned Congresswoman Liz Cheney earlier. Of course, here in Illinois, we have a close eye on Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who has decided not to run for re-election after the Democrats who drew the maps here put him in with a more conservative colleague. I mean, he probably would have had a hard time either way. But do you think Democrats have some obligation to the few Republicans who are standing up against the forces, the anti-democratic forces in their party?
Yes, I do. So, you know, it was good that Nancy Pelosi asked Cheney and Kinzinger to serve on the January 6th Select Committee. They have both acquitted themselves marvelously and stood up for the Constitution and the rule of law in a very articulate and moving way. So what I would, you know, urge Democrats to do, if they live in Wyoming, and, you know, even if it requires re-registering briefly as Republicans, to, you know, vote in that primary for Liz Cheney against the Trumpster big lie candidate who is opposing her. And, you know, if Adam Kinzinger runs statewide. I would urge Democrats to vote for him.
I think he just within the last day or so, you might have just been late breaking that he sort of foreclosed that window. He's going to focus on his private work.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, but I mean, okay. Still, I don't think that the maps are such that Illinois Democrats are not going to have many opportunities to do that. But
by the way, I'm not telling Democrats to vote for either Cheney, or if Kinzinger were to run for statewide office, for Kinzinger in a general election. I'm talking about getting involved in trying to save the Republican Party from its anti-democratic elements. And, you know, I think to call them authoritarians is actually a little bit confusing. I'm not sure people really understand so well and, you know, what it means to be an authoritarian. It doesn't sound that horrible. What they really are is they're fascists, as you know, Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, has indicated. So, you know, if you have, if the polls show that 21 million Americans believe that violence could be necessary to restore Donald Trump to the presidency. So whether they know it or not, they are fascists if they believe that. That's what fascism is. You know, these are very perilous times we're in, and people have to get engaged. And, you know, one of the, there's a mm-hmm. few hopeful things. First of
almost,
all,
almost we're basically, sorry, we're pretty much out of time. So yeah. I think we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Jonathan Alter for joining us again. He was with us 1 year ago, the day after the insurrection in the Capitol. And thank you again for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Alter is the author of His Very Best, a biography on Jimmy Carter. He's also, you can read his columns in the Daily Beast, see his analysis on MSNBC. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.